Well, good morning, everyone. This is Hugh Culver with CAPS, and sorry for a little delay there. I was actually looking for the record button. I'm just kidding. So this is Hugh Culver with CAPS, and this is an interview with David Wood, and it's a part of an ongoing series that we're conducting throughout the year. We started this program about 3 years ago where we wanted to reach out to our members throughout the year and to give them some great sources of inspiration, education, resources from people that are in the field. So maybe it's from people that are doing things like, for example, writing books and you haven't written a book yet, or they're on the main stage and that's not become a big part of your platform yet, or they're facilitators or they're coaches. And the idea is for you to learn from people that are doing things that you want to do in your business and for you to start to apply those so you can actually grow your business, serve a lot more people, and have a lot more success. And when you log into your CanadianSpeakers.org website, you're going to find out where all of those recordings are. And that's where this recording will be as well in just a few days after we finish the recording today. So this is about a 60-minute call, and you will have a chance about halfway through to ask some questions of David. And I will give you that invitation as we get closer. So in the meantime, you are actually muted, so you can go ahead and, you know, pour coffee or whatever you want to do. We're not going to hear you. But I will give you a chance to ask some questions. So here's what I'm going to recommend that you do is, as we go through this call, there's going to be a lot of information coming at you. And I want you to start writing down a question that you want to ask David. You know what that's like when someone says, okay, who's got questions, and there's this deathly silence? It's because we're sort of been surprised. I want you to not be surprised. I want you to start thinking, what would I like to know? This is my one chance to ask this guy a question about, you know, my business or his life or his experience that I can learn from. So I really want you to take advantage of that. I want you to write down a question as we go through the interview. Don't just sit back there passively and kind of wonder if there's going to be some big light bulb moment. I want you to write down the question so that when I actually give you that opportunity, you've got some great questions to ask David. So let me tell you a little bit about David. He's going to tell you a lot more about him, of course, but I want to tell you a little bit about why I've invited him to be on this call, because, you know, we really only do probably six of these in a year because everybody's so busy and we have our convention and a lot of people, you know, certainly are going to take off at least the July and August months. And so we do about only six a year. And so we really carefully select the people that are going to be on these calls. And I particularly wanted to have David on this call. David Wood has had this amazing life where really he has created a career for himself and has accelerated in a way that, you know, frankly, I don't know anybody that has moved so quickly up through the ranks to where he is sharing stages with, you know, Jack Canfield and John Gray and Lisa Nichols and Paul Zane Pilzer. And then more recently, he has created a podcast, which is called Kick-Ass Life, which if you have not subscribed to it, you must subscribe to Kick-Ass Life. It is one of my regular sources of inspiration and entertainment when I head out in the morning for a run. So Kick-Ass Life, just go to iTunes, and Kick-Ass Life podcast is also kicking ass. It has really taken off. It's super popular. He's already had on the Kick-Ass Life, I mean, again, Jack Canfield, Deepak Chopra, Sam Horn, who is a real whiz at helping people to write and come up with wild statements, Mike Dooley, Tim Ferriss, the author of The 4-Hour Workweek. He's had Les Brown, John Assaraf. I know John Assaraf is even host of The Kick-Ass Life already, and more recently, Cesar Millan. So, you know, really the who's who of the thinkers and the authors that are out there in the world and the public speakers. So, David, welcome to the Business Growth Series.
Well, thank you so much, Hugh, and I really appreciate your living in the same town as you, because even though we don't see each other as much as I'd like, we certainly get to see each other. And just to correct one small correction, it's called The Kick-Ass Life, T-H-E, The Kick-Ass Life. But I really appreciate what you're doing. I think this is such an incredible resource for anyone that really wants to find their voice and step out onto stages of the world and really make a difference.
great. Yeah. Well, I thank you for that. And, you know, Canada's a big country, and the people on this call, I can tell already we've got people from pretty well every province. We've even got folks from California on the call, which is totally great. And so it really is a big spread out country, and I think that the more that we can provide great content like this, the more we can all prosper and do what we're really here to do, which is, you know, of course, serve people, and in return, be served ourselves. You know, I wanted to kick off with, you know, quite often what we do on these shows, David, of course, is we read people's bio. And, you know, I think that that's always helpful, and everybody gets a bit of a context for where you're coming from. But, you know, in your case, as someone that has got to know you more through your podcast probably than when we've met, but, you know, you have a pretty remarkable story. You know, you really... And I know in the Kick-Ass Life, you know, you share bits of it here and there, but, you know, I just wonder if you could kind of give us a bit of a sense of who is David Wood, and how is it that you have now gotten to a place where, you know, you've got Jack Canfield on your speed dial. So tell us
a
little bit.
Well, that's a great question. I suppose if I go back, and just to give you the sort of elevator version, so... you know, when I was 15, my teacher sat me down. His name was Mr. Osler. And he looked me in the eye and he says, David, he said, you're the worst student I've had in 37 years of teaching, and you're probably going to end up in jail or on the streets. And I was a pretty angry kid, you know. So I, being the enlightened student that I was, I told him to get lost. And I left school that day angry. I left home just after that. And I started dabbling in business, you know, as a young teenager. And then when I was 20, something happened that dramatically changed my life. At the time when I was, you know, I was in England, most of my friends were getting high, they're smoking pot, or getting drunk, or both. You know, I'd been in jail for, you know, I'd been stealing cars, you know. So I was like, you know, and in fact, I used to shoplift a lot because of survival. I mean, I was, you know, just to eat sometimes. It wasn't like I was out stealing things, but I often steal food to eat. So I sort of was in that kind of mindset, you know. But I started dabbling in business, and it started going quite well. But then when I was 20, 12 mates of mine left for a six-day trip to Tunisia. It's a DART team. I don't even know where Tunisia is. And we go there, and of course, you know, we're drunk the whole time. And when they leave, I have a couple of $1,000 left in my money belt. And I decide I'm going to travel till my money runs out. And they fly off in Tunis. And as I turn around, it's like I see the country for the first time because I'm alone. And, you know, and I didn't understand any culture, let alone a Muslim culture. And I was terrified. And I remember walking back to my hotel room and locking myself in the room. And I kept looking at my passport and saying, you know, when I get back, I'm going to show everyone where I've been. But I was terrified to leave the room. And so finally, after a week, I sort of burnt through not half, but almost half my money. I decide to go down to a travel agent, and I attempt to buy a ticket to Israel. Now, I'm in an Arab country. I'm saying to the guy, can I buy a ticket to Israel? They said, well, Israel doesn't exist. And I'm saying, well, no, of course it does. And I'm arguing with this guy because I have zero understanding of the world or culture or people. Finally, I fly into Egypt. Anyway, this starts a 10-and-a-half-year journey, 42 countries. And when I arrived in Canada, I arrived in 1989 or 88, late 88, early 89, and I slept on a roof the first night because I had this rule by then that I could never spend a dime until I had somewhere to live and I had work. And I flew into Victoria. I got my first job was at the Admiral Motel, which is still owned by Gene and Alan, who I worked for. It's now called the Admiral Hotel. And I worked at Barb's Fish and Chips, which is a famous fish and chip shop, in the afternoons. And that started my journey in Canada. And honestly, you know, I didn't have a work permit here, but I traveled across the country, and I fell in love. I fell in love with the country. And, you know, I stumbled off over this desire to live here, and I did. I found a way. I found a way to become a Canadian, and what a beautiful place to live. And I started dabbling in business again, but this time with a different mindset. I read a book called Think and Grow Rich, which changed everything for me. No one had ever told me I could be wealthy. No one had ever told me I could have what I want. No one ever told me that the way I was thinking was impacting the outcomes in my life, and I started to change them. And, you know, I ended up growing multiple multi-million-dollar companies, and, you know, and I did very, very well successfully. But, you know, my marriage started to fail. And my wife at the time, she said to me, oh, actually, let me go back one step. This is a really important step. About 13 years ago, maybe 12, my friend Sean asked me to MC his wedding. And he says, Dave, don't do anything conventional. Now, you have to understand, at that time, I wasn't a speaker, I wasn't a trainer, I wasn't on stage. That was the furthest thing from my imagination. I had no idea that I'd be doing this, right? And so I emcee his wedding. And when I finished the emcee portion, the whole groom side of the family had all traveled up from the United States to a small town called Caslow in the Kootenays, and they got up and they left. And two of them came behind stage where I was standing, and I knew I blew it. And I was sweating. My heart was pounding. I was just trying to already think, what have I done? And these two people walked up and said, that's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen. And they left. And so here I am standing behind the curtain, terrified to go out. I get my clothes. I scoot out the back door. I leave. I don't go back to the wedding. I fly to Europe the next day. And for about 2 years, I'm consumed by this total public humiliation. You know, the groom's family, a lot of them didn't speak to the groom for a year. They didn't come back to the wedding. I mean, it was a complete schmuzzle, right? And so for years, you know, this consumed me, ate me. I kept trying to go back and right these wrongs, you know. And then one day, when my marriage started to fail, my wife had asked me to go to a personal development program she'd heard about, run by Harv Eker. And it's up in the mountains. It's called Warrior Camp. It's like one of his elite programs. You know, so you're doing firewalks and ropes courses. It's really, really elite. I didn't even know who he was. You know, I mean, I'd read Think and Grow Rich 12 years before, but I haven't done any personal development programs. You know, and so what happened was halfway through the second day, I looked at my wife and I said, I'm going to teach this program. And Les Brown says this. He said the two most important days in a person's life is the day they're born and the day they discover why. And in that moment, I discovered why. And I discovered why I'd gone through so much pain with public speaking, this humiliation I'd carried for years. You know, and I worked really, really hard for a couple of years to get on Harv's stage. And he didn't make it easy. But what I did, because of my life experience, because of what happened to me, because of my understanding, I did quite well. And I did quite well because I ate two things. One, I practiced hard. And the second was I kept putting myself in the right situations. And before long, I became a master trainer for T. Harv Eker. I was selling anywhere from $1.5 to $4 million in personal growth every weekend. You know, I was making $150,000 a weekend in commissions doing what I loved. And it started this journey. And you asked the question, you know, how do I end up with Jack on speed dial? You know, I kept sort of in this craft, and I became known as the trainer's trainer or a teacher of teachers. And what it really came down to for me was training people how to be off stage so that when they went on stage, they brought themselves with them. So if you're a beautiful, kind, authentic, open, generous, you know, connected person off stage, when you're on stage, it's quite easy to bring that with you if you have a certain amount of skills. So when you combine skills with a great human being, you have a great trainer. And so that's, I know that's what you want to talk about today. And, you know, I kept putting myself in situations where I would be tripping over these people. And Jack and I are great friends now. We're business partners. We actually own a resort together where, you know, we do transformational programs. And sometimes I pinch myself because, you know, you mentioned some of those names like John Assaraf or Don Miguel Ruiz. And these have all become friends of mine. And partly I set the intention, Hugh, to make them my friends. And then I went and hung out where they were, and then I just showed up authentically, and we became friends. And I can't tell you the magic of me putting them on speed dial, but I think my whole story led to that moment where I just felt like this was the world I wanted to play in.
You say it as if it's sort of an everyday occurrence, but I think that for myself and like everyone on the call, our sort of jaws are dropping. I mean, I've been to some of T. Harv Eker's programs, and you know, it's a bit of a frenzy there, David. Like, before we move on, like, what was it like when you finally were granted that stage? You're up there. There's what, like 1,500 people in that audience. You know, it must have been a bit of a mind trip to actually have, you know, really without a huge amount of, you know, like years of traveling on stages. Like, what was that like for you?
Well, you know, that was really interesting because I remember the first time I was given a chance, I did a piece, and Harv was really hard. I mean, he made it as hard as he could for a trainer. It wasn't like, hey, come on in. He wanted to put every roadblock in front of you and see if you'd crumble under it. You know, and a lot did. I mean, I watched a lot of people who tried to pursue that road, and they just didn't have the fortitude. And I used to bash head with Harv, with Harv as well. But this is early days, right? So he'd give you a chance. He'd say, okay, I want you to do this one piece. It's an hour long. So I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. There's 1,600 people in the audience, and I'm doing this kind of reflective piece where there's some tears and some writing, you know. And I had listened to Harv do it maybe 100 times, and I knew every intonation. I knew everything. So I just studied him. I always say one of the quickest routes to success is to find someone who's great at something and copy them and then add a spin. Add your own authentic spin, but look at the nuts and bolts or the nuances of what they do. And I studied Harv Eker. I watched what he did. I studied him the whole time. I was like a servant to him for a year. I mean, I'd run and get him water, you know, I'd polish his shoes. And, you know, I mean, you have to eat some humble pie, but that's what the price I was willing to pay to get into the arena was to be a servant of it first. I ran mics. I ran the back of the room, I'd run handouts, I'd do whatever it took to put myself in that spot. But then when I got my chance, I'm up there and I'm doing this piece, and I remember I'm standing up there, and I remember standing backstage before I was introduced, and my heart thumping in my chest. I come out and I go into this sort of automatic mode of the piece that I studied so hard on. So I go through it, I have my notes in front of me on my music stand, and at some point everyone's writing, people are crying, and I'm thinking, wow, I'm doing it. I'm starting to celebrate on stage in the back of my head, and I wander back to the back of the stage, and there's a big a bar stool, which we have on the stage at Peaks, and I sit down. I feel I'm just going to bask in the glory of my success. I'm like really like patting myself on the back, and suddenly I disappear through the back of the curtains. I smash my head on the wall. I've still got my mic live. It's like it knocks all the wind out of my body. It's like this, you know. And now I don't know what's happened. It's just suddenly gone completely pitch black, and someone's whacked me in the back of the head, right? And I'm first time on stage running this piece, right? And I somehow find the strength. You know, my feet are hovering like it looks like a Cirque du Soleil act. The feet are hovering about 4.5 feet in the air up the curtain. Suddenly I lunge back through the curtain, and half the room is absolutely peeing their pants, and the other half are totally in shock with tears running down their face. And my logistics supervisor, Shelley, she's running down. I see her mouth in the F word. It's like, no, like this. And I jump through, and I'm like, everything's fine. I still don't know what's happened. I don't know what really happened, because it happened so fast. So that was my first time on stage that a complete bomb happened. And then the first time I got an MMI, the Millionaire Mind Intensive, my first one that I ran, Harv actually told me that he would never let me run my own one. And I looked at him and I said, Harv, you know, I said, I'm going to be ready, and one day you're going to be sick and you're going to need me. I'm just going to let you know I'm going to be ready. I'm going to keep practicing and you're going to have to use me. Because he just was like, I was a little bit too cocky for Harv, actually. You know, and that's what happened. He got sick. They had an MMI in New Jersey. And there's, again, 1,500 people. And I'm up there, and you know what? I'm doing one of the cells. And cells are big in the Peaks Arena. I threw my jacket on the bar stool, on the stage stool again. And I'm starting doing this cell. I've rolled my sleeves up. I'm really getting into it. And suddenly my jacket catches fire, and it blows all the lights in the arena. So now it's pitch black. My jacket's on fire. Because what I'd done was I put my jacket over the stool. The stage lights were right under it. I didn't see it. I had this $800 jacket suddenly ignite in flames. Blew all the lights in the arena. So I would say that I've earned my stripes, but I had a lot of things. You know, there's that wonderful saying, every master was once a disaster. And why I dedicate so much time in training trainers is to really help them understand this journey and to really help them find that authentic piece where these parts, these stories, really become the fodder, I think, of great trainers. It's not what we just do well. It's learning how to go through those peaks and valleys and those hurdles, which seem massive at the time. I mean, if I'd gone back to the humiliation from the wedding and I look at how I dealt with, you know, the catching of fire, because I'd gone through the humiliation for years, and because I was able to suddenly start looking at the sort of imperfection of who I was able to be in those situations and just handle them so much more differently. And really, they became the great stories of my stage, is all these kind of screw-ups. So it's very liberating once you get to this place.
I love that. You know, there's something there, David. I mean, maybe we all haven't, you know, we haven't had the jacket catch fire or do it in front of 1,600 people, but there's something there about, I suppose, humility. And you've said a couple times around authenticity. You know, as a teacher of teachers, like, what is it that you You know, it's I guess what I'm getting at is it's one thing to experience it. It's another thing to teach others how to excel on the stage. And what is it you've learned? Like what, you know, a lot of people on this call have been in front of 10 people, 100 people, maybe 1,000 people. But when you are comfortable in front of 10,000 people, or, you know, getting off a red eye and still looking like you got it all together or whatever you've had to go through in your career, like what is it you teach teachers? Like what is it you tell them at a sort of a high level?
Well, you know, there's lots of things. You know, obviously, you know, I'll do a 7-day program on this, so I'm going to give you a couple of nuts and bolts. One of the key things is to be interested, not interesting. One of the key mistakes teachers make is they think it's about them. They think it's about the data. They think it's about, you know, getting it right and saying and doing the right thing. And that's so far from the truth. A great trainer is somebody that connects with an audience. So it's about someone who's interested. I always say about creating the conversation with the audience. There's people who've learned how to orate and deliver information. Yeah, you can do that. Les Brown's a friend of mine, and I taught Les Brown how to sell on stage, right? But I mean, he's a magnificent speaker. But I believe that everyone on this call wants to learn how to be a magnificent trainer. And a trainer is someone, when I think about my goals when I'm on stage, my goal is to light someone's brain up so that 10 years from today they can still remember some of the things I taught them, as opposed to 10 minutes later it's all gone. And to light someone's brain up, we have to understand that, you know, there's certain things that have to occur in a room. You know, and so you've got your visual learners, your auditory learners, your kinesthetic learners, and they all need different things. And so imagine the brain lighting up like fireworks, synapses going off, because we don't just deliver information and results, but we do it in such a way that we light the brain up so that people remember, and it goes so deep through repetition, through whole brain learning, through, you know, accelerated learning, through movement, through connection, through color, through everything. So what it does is it becomes this incredible conversation, this incredible story of information. So people just love, time flies. You know, they're there for 4 or 5 days and they're running back into the room because they just want to come and learn again because it's exciting. And I think one of the big mistakes a new trainer makes is they think it's about them. They think it's about the data. They think they have to be interesting, and I think those kill the creativity of a master trainer. I mean, but in the beginning, we all suffer from that. It's just learning that that's not important. The most important thing is getting into a conversation with your audience. And I teach people how to do that in a matter of seconds. They're on stage within the first 3 minutes, they're already in a conversation with the audience. Now, it's subliminal, but they're in the conversation. They're speaking, and the audience is responding. There's this going back and forth, and it's continually being interested in knowing where the audience is at, where the energy is at, where's the conversation at, what's understood, are they really understanding? You know, and I was training a trainer this last weekend. We did a gig in Regina, you know, and it was interesting watching him ask his questions. Do everyone get that? And not even waiting for the reply or not even asking the question in a way that denotes a reply. Because if you ask the question, does everyone get that? You know, the people that don't get it have not been asked. They're the ones you're most interested in. Is anyone not quite understand this yet? Anyone have a question? And wait, watch. And those shy people that really don't understand, suddenly if you make it safe for them, they're going to suddenly ask the question that everyone's asking. You know, that everyone's kind of confused about. Now you're back in the conversation, and they're leading you, and it's this dance, and it's such a beautiful dance, but it's something that we all have to learn. It's not something that's innate, but we practice it in our kitchens. We practice it with our kids. We practice it with our friends, of asking great questions and listening deeply for the answer. That's what we practice. We practice off stage. We bring it onto the stage.
That's so good. I think that, you know, often there's this misconception when I'm giving a keynote speech that I need to convey and teach a lot of information. And so it's a very much a one-way conversation. But what I hear you saying is actually we need to be in conversation, you know, with the audience. We need to engage them. And I think for a lot of people that's hard because they don't want to have a Q&A happening. You know, they've been paid to deliver. But I think what I hear you saying is that it's kind of, well, you said at a subliminal level, people are responding sort of unconsciously, like they are sort of, you know, like nodding inside. What do you think about, like this is getting a little bit tactical here, David, but like what do you think about the call and response type techniques that, you know, so many people use, like turn to your partner and say this or whatever. Do you use those sorts of techniques?
I don't do a lot of that. You know, turn to someone, give them a high five and say, you're amazing. I understand why that's there. I rarely, if ever, do that. I will do a massage to create energy. I mean, you're managing energy. Remember, your job as a trainer, even as a speaker, is to manage the energy in the room. And if the energy is waning, it's because you're boring, right? And you just got to look at that. So if you're actually in conversation, so subliminal conversation means that if I was talking to you and you start closing your eyes, you know, you've been in that situation before, right? You're sitting there with someone who's had a couple of beers, you're having a conversation, they nod off in the middle of your conversation. Well, you're probably not going to keep talking, right? And the truth is the audience will nod off. And scientifically, they can't sit there for more than 7 minutes anyway, especially men, and listen to you babble on, right? So you've got to get out of your own way and find different ways. So asking questions, even if you're not looking, asking relating questions. So how many of you relate to that? You know, so you give a point, all right? And a great way to do it would be this. Let's say you only had 20 minutes, you know, or 15 minutes, because it's not about the time. And so first of all, most people have too much data. So they think, oh, 15 minutes, I'm going to give them so much stuff. I would rather you give them a third, an eighth of as much stuff. Give them something that they can really learn and drive it, repeat it. Repetition's the mother of skill. That's where they're going to get it, right? Give them different ways of learning the same thing. So when they walk out, they say, I got it. Otherwise, what's going to happen is like skimming a stone across a pond. You're going to keep giving all this information, new stuff, new stuff, new stuff. You're going to look brilliant, you think. They can't remember They can't remember anything that you did or what you said. So a great way would be something like, let's say you have a few minutes. You give one major point and you say, hey, here's what I want you to do. Just turn to two or three people and just discuss, what did you learn from that? What's your big highlight? What's your big takeaway and how can you use it? And you just shut up for a few minutes and let them talk. Let them talk to each other. So all of the auditory learners, the people that need to speak, they can't learn unless they're speaking and they're repeating, right? So you give them a chance. The kinesthetic learners are now having a kinesthetic experience. So they're now the visual learners, obviously, if you have a handout or if you have something up on the PowerPoint, and for goodness sake, please don't have writing on a PowerPoint, not too much of it anyway. So now what you're thinking about is you're thinking about learning styles, that in fact the need to be able to train in a multidimensional approach so that all learning styles come along. And what I look for is the lowest or weakest denominator in the room. The person at the back with their arms folded, that's who I teach to, the back right and left corner of the room. Those people in the front, they're diehards. They think they already love you. They, you know, their tails are wagging, their tongues are out, they're panting. They love you. That's not who you teach to. You teach to the back of the room, the ones that aren't getting it. And when you teach to the people that aren't getting it and you let them get it, then everyone gets it on such a deep level. And that's what I mean about the conversation. The conversation is you're speaking, you're looking for a response, you're listening to the response, and then you're adding to it. So it's this beautiful synergy, and it's a template. I mean, I use templates to absolutely keep me safe, walk on any stage anywhere in the world, because I use templates and systems. It's not just, you know, it's not something you can't teach. You know, people aren't duplicatable, but systems are, right?
Mm-hmm. So good. Yeah, so good. You know, my sense is I'd love to see you pull this off live. You know, I have this impression that it's pretty magical, and I can just tell the energy, you know, from your conversation here, it would be great. And I'm wondering, so give me a sense of a template. So I understand frameworks in terms of a framework in my content, but tell me about like a template so that if someone said, David, you know, we want you to talk today about, we want you to talk, you know, about vision or pride you know,
Can I give you a story though that will give this will give it relevance. I left school when I was 15. I never went back to school. I never got qualified for anything. So I'd never ever, academically, I'm not the guy, right? So, and then a few years, maybe 3 years ago, I was asked by a good friend of mine if I would come to his university and teach. And I said, yeah, sure, I'll come. And I'm thinking he wants me to come and do a 1 hour thing. I have no idea. We didn't really talk about it. And I'm at an event with 8,000 people, finish the event. I have to jump in a car. I mean, where was I? I was in Vegas. And I drive up to Utah to this university. And it's a university that, what are they, I can't remember, what's the name of it? They Statesmen. It was, they believed that they created Statesmen, right? And they had pictures of Mahatma Gandhi and, you know, Martin Luther King and Mother Teresa all over the walls. And I walk in there, and for about 4 hours, the university is kind of, the people are coming in and defending their thesis, you know, and so these teachers are sitting behind the desk, and they're being extremely, like, really not great to these kids. These kids are, you know, attempting to get their master's or their PhDs or wherever it was, and I'm kind of lost. I mean, this is a whole new world for me, but all I can see is how these teachers are so harsh, and I'm watching it, and suddenly, you know, Jim's saying, are you ready? And I'm saying, sure, what is it? Well, what am I doing? I still really hadn't got it, because I'd been driving all night. I'd been on stage. I hadn't thought about it. He said, well, you're up for 2 days. I said, what? He says, yeah, and who am I teaching? The teachers, the professors, these doctors, and every one of them were doctor this and doctor that, and their titles. I mean, they wore them like, you know, like, you talk about sheets of armor. It's like, you know, I'm a doctor. It's like, and you're, I mean, if you're not a doctor, you're not worth talking to. That's kind of how it felt. And so this is where I had to rely on a template. And worse was, three of the family who had invited me got up and did an introduction. And they built me up like I was, you know, the Messiah. And, you know, so I could do no wrong. And here I am in a university, terrified. I'm like, I have nothing prepared. Okay, really zero prepared. And I'm meant to teach for 2 days. Right?
Wow. Wow.
You get this? All right. So what do? I lean on my templates. Right, and so I have an opening, and I have everything, because I realize if I'm going to duplicate a trainer, if I want to train a trainer to train, I need to give them a system that they can train under, and then once they master the system, then they can get on being authentic. Then they can really get out of their head and get into the moment, which is the connection with their audience. Right. So, for example, you know, when are you most nervous?
Oh, just before I get on stage.
Right. Yeah. When is the audience most skeptical?
When I get on stage.
Just
right
before you
like,
get on stage, right? They're like, who's this guy? Is he a creep? Is he a this? Is he that? You know, they're like, they're waiting, right? So typically I have a sort of a system for opening an event. So basically I don't like running on stage. I typically ask my trainers to walk on stage, because for two reasons. There's two primary reasons. And when they're being introduced, I like them to be looking at the audience. So if they're at the front of the room, then just to look out at the audience as they're introducing. So they're always looking to have the connection. It's always about connection. Always, always, always about the connection to the audience, right? And so, or if they're at the back of the room, it's not to come charging down the hallway out of breath and to arrive on stage with their heart beating. It's to walk up, and as they walk, it's to look at people and connect and smile, so that there's already this connection and there's a pace to it. Then, so that's part of the system. Walk to the stage, right? Plant your feet on the stage. So really get grounded before you start talking. A lot of people fidget, right? To scan the audience. I mean, this is stuff that Harv Eker used to teach in his train-the-trainer program as well. I've modified it a little bit, right? But, you know, scan the audience. So before you say anything, what they used to do, what used to is people coming up there and talking, telling a joke, saying hello. What they're not used to is a big, silent pause. And your job is to enroll 100% of the audience. So as you stand there and you just wait and you just look around, smile, the audience goes quiet, that's already new for them. They're already leaning in. There's always a little intrigue. There's always a question. This is different. They don't even know what's different. It's just different because you're not up there just jibber-jabbing, right? So then the first thing out of your mouth should always be a question. The second thing out of your mouth should always be a question. The third thing out of your mouth should always be a question. I can't tell you how many trainers I've trained this, and they'll still go up and say, hello. No. The first thing out of your mouth is a question. So I ask what-if questions or imagine questions. So, for example, I just did an event this weekend, and because I've done it so much, I would say in the beginning I would spend hours coming up with my three questions, right? I would spend hours in that. What is a question that sets up the whole event? So I just did an event this weekend for network marketers, and it's called the University in Action. And really, teaching people how to create wealth, but it's really about their belief system, blah, 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 right? So I'll walk on stage, plant my feet, and I'll stand there, and I'll say, well, imagine that you could learn one thing this weekend that could completely transform your business. How many of you would get really excited about that one thing? Right? So what was my big promise is one thing. I asked the question. People are like, it's not a like, hey, how many of you? Like this big, big yelling thing, because I'm building gradient. My second question wants to build on my first question. So I said, so what if? What if that one thing? What if that one thing didn't only transform your business, but actually transform the way you have relationships with your wife, with your husband, with your children, with your friends, and absolutely transformed your life, which then transformed your business? How many could get really excited about that? Boom, the audience is already in. So I've been on stage now for 30 seconds. I've connected. I've asked two questions, which is engaging. And my third question could be anything. It could be, and how many of you are ready just to have a great time over the next weekend? Or I may build on the previous two questions, right? And so the idea then is to ask enrolling questions. The audience's hands are going up. By the time the second one, I may even say something like, guys, pretend I'm blind. Answer that question as if I'm blind. And suddenly the audience will roar, yeah, I'm excited. So here I am. Remember my job. The first 10 minutes, the first 10 steps is for me to get grounded. It's for me to build, to be in a safety net. So I'm not up there trying to be interesting. I'm not up there trying to woo them. All I'm trying to do is get grounded, get in my body, really start the connection, you know, allow myself to breathe, you know, get myself, because I mean, I'm even as an experienced trainer, I still want to use my template. I don't go off it. I don't pretend I'm beyond it. I still use it, right? And so that after I've done the enrolling questions, I'll ask the questions and I'll say, well, awesome, you know, great, thanks. Well, hey, my name's David Wood, a welcome too. So I'll do a welcome. And then I'll do acknowledgments. And the reason I do acknowledgments is because, remember, I'm in the energy business. I don't need to acknowledge right there and then, but my job as a professional trainer is to create energy in the room. And if I understand my job first and understand that connecting while I'm working is a really, really, really big part of it, then using acknowledgement simply raises the energy in the room and gets people clapping. It gets the energy stirred, you know, before I start speaking, right? So now I'm up there. I'm in my template. I've asked some questions. I've done my welcome. I say, hey, a couple of people I'd really like to acknowledge, right? And then I'd pick someone that's most important to them, not to me. Because I want the acknowledgement to come into them and like, yeah, I want to really thank that person. So let's pretend there's someone they all love. Let's say it's your event and you have me on as a guest trainer and they all have this relationship with you. I'd say, you know, there's someone I'd really like to thank before I start. You know, I've only known Hugh for a little time here, blah, blah, blah. And I'd build you up. I'd say, hey, let's give him a huge round of applause. And all the love goes pouring over to you, which in turn stirs the energy in the room, which allows me to take a sip of water or whatever, or just stand there. And guess what? I'm getting in my body now. The audience is engaged. I am settling in. I'm breathing. I mean, I'm not uptight. I'm not trying to be clever. I'm using a system. And then I may throw another one in. You know, volunteers is always great because people love to acknowledge it. I say, and by the way, guys, when I was backstage here or, you know, just if you noticed when you walked in, all those people in the green shirts or those people that signed you in, you know, I just wanted to tell you, you know, we owe them such a debt of gratitude. I wonder if, let's give our volunteers a huge round of applause. And quite often people will stand up at that point and they'll clap. Now, remember, all I'm doing is creating energy at that point. And, yeah, I'm doing some nice things, but I'm creating energy, right? And then typically what I'll do is I'll go into, you know, letting people know what they're going to get out of the piece I'm with. And I may do that in a number of ways. I may ask questions. Hey, guys, what is it you'd like to get out of this next 20 minutes? What would you like to get out of this next hour? You know, or I'll say, hey, guys, I'd like to share a couple of things you're going to get out of these next 20 minutes. You know, or talking about connection or talking about relationships or whatever, I would do a let them know what's going on. That's part of my system. And then I'll ask permission and share my story and just say, hey, would it be okay if I share my story? And typically, if I'm on a seven-day program, I could take 15 minutes to share my story, and it's always the relevant part of my story. So what's relevant? When you asked me to share my story, I told stories about the wedding. I told stories about Harv, you know, and a little bit about, you know, my adventure. But primarily, I wanted people at the end of the story to make it relevant to what we're talking about. So if you're teaching on fear, then, you know, your story wants to have something in it that's relevant to the subject that you're teaching on. If you're teaching about network marketing, then there wants to be some relevance in it. If you're teaching about training, then make your story part of it that's relevant to the audience because it's going to make them lean in. And that's your piece, right? And then typically I'll set agreements. You know, I'll ask for some agreements. If I'm only on a short piece, I don't do the agreements. If I'm not the main trainer, but if I'm the main trainer, I always can tell a sloppy audience by whether there's been some agreements in place. And so typically what I'll do is, you know, I really look at the agreements. And typically I go for three main agreements to just be open. And so I say, how many of you agree that, you know, or how many of you would agree to be open to some new ways of thinking, or open to new ways to looking at your life this weekend, or to looking at your business, you know, open to connecting to more people? I would add a lot of opens on there, but how many of you would like to be open this weekend? Awesome. Anyone not? You know, and typically I'll do that sort of thing. I'll ask for three agreements: open, play at 100%, and have fun. Those are my three agreements, and I typically do those, and that's my template, you know. And so when I walked in front of those professors, I just jumped straight into the template, and I engaged the room, by which time I got my feet under me, and it led me to my next template. And so I would follow it immediately with another template.
That's great. I love it. And you know, I think everyone on the call would agree that there's times when you just aren't as prepared as you maybe want to be, you know, for whatever happened in the days preceding, or maybe you were reading the audience, or maybe even you arrived at the event, and even though you did some pre-planning and maybe even did some interviews, it's a little different than you expected, and that's where templates are so brilliant, because you just fall back onto your process, right, and you can start to read the audience as you go through that process. Well, I wanted to give people a chance to ask some questions as we go into the last couple of minutes here. We've got about 19 minutes or something left. And so if folks on the call want to ask David a question, just hit *2 on your telephone, and then that's going to light up on my dashboard here. And hit *2 on your telephone. That'll let me know you're interested. And then you can just go ahead and ask David a question. Just as simple as just if you just say your name and then go ahead and ask him a question. So the first one up is, your phone number ends with 0101.
Oh, that's me. Hello?
Hey, there you go.
Hi there.
Yep, you're on.
I'm Susanna. I'm calling from Montreal. And I love what you just shared with us, your template. And my question for you then is, I've seen T. Harv Eker speak, but it's mostly in a group of 3,000 people. This kind of training, this kind of template, I see how it could really rile up an audience of, you know, 100 or 1,000 people. But if you're training 10 people, how would you change your template? 10 or 20 or 30 people?
That's such a great question. And, I mean, Sarah, who's actually Hugh's assistant, she watched me at a wedding recently, MC the wedding. I use the same template in the wedding. I use the template everywhere, right? So you just do it differently. You don't do it. You don't walk and plant, but you have to remember certain rules. You take the certain rules, which is your job is to enroll the audience. So what you do is you ask enrolling questions. You could sit down on the stage and in a quiet little voice say, hey, you know, so how many of you today are really blah, 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 right? How many of you would really like to talk about money? You know, it doesn't have to be this big thing. What you do is you take the template, because your job is still to ask questions, to introduce yourself, to acknowledge, to get the energy in the room, to teach the audience how to treat you. That's a really great way to do it. So at least if you start the same way. Otherwise, with 10 people, if you throw me in front of 10 people, I just use a smaller body language, but as connected, and I still go back to the same template, because you could take out the walk, the plant, the scan, but the scan's still there. You still want to walk in. If someone's introducing you, you could still walk in and sit on the chair and just smile at them and say, look, you know, and start immediately with a question. Ask another question. Ask another question. Right? Thank them. Remember to thank them after a question, because you're teaching them how to be. And what you want to do in your enrolling questions, you want to make sure they know how it's going to be for the rest of the event. And if you're kind of really kind of sloppy, and you know, you're kind of trying to be, too chatty, right? Some of them are going to switch off because it's not relevant to them. And the most important job for you is to engage 100% of that room, whether it's 10, whether it's 100 or 100,000.
Thank you.
Nice one. Thanks, Suzanne. Appreciate that.
And
Marianne's got a question here from Niagara Falls. She's asking, any tips on how to define your niche? She says, I teach about workplace communication, but what's the unique USP, so unique selling proposition? I'm stumped. So the question is around, so how do I take workplace communication and kind of narrow that down so that I can sort of, you know, come up with a niche that's unique to me?
That's a great question, you know, and I think it's a question where I probably need to ask you a number of questions before I can come up. But let me say this. I love niches, but the other thing is, I look at one of the great things about a trainer is range. I think personal range is something that's magnificent. And it's what I teach most of my trainers. That's why I like doing 7-day programs with them, is to get them into more of a range of their life, right? So, and so what I would say is, yes, it's good to have a niche. However, it's also good to have range. And when you say about workplace communication, I mean, well, think of all the things that come along with that. You know, relationships, results. You know, I mean, and so, I mean, I could go into probably if I sat and thought about it, maybe 15 different things that come through communication. And communication is one of those wonderful things that bridges all gaps. I mean, communication is a foundational piece in life, you know. And so what I do is, I have a program called The Art of Connection, where I teach people how to connect. And I would say that 80% of my last program was all about building relationships, which is all about communication. So the beautiful thing about your niche is you got to start thinking, instead of data, remember data, these are the 7 points of communication. Then what is communication? The way I would teach it is I would create exercises in your trainings where people communicate. I would create questions where they're constantly with new partners, constantly connecting, where they learn not from data but from experience, and then from the data we teach them what they just learned. And that's what I do a lot. So I don't know if that answers your whole question, but it's a very, very long question, I think, when it comes to your unique selling proposition and everything. So did that help, do you think, Hugh?
I think so. First of all, I think that Marion's on to a great question, and that is, how do I narrow down, to a topic that's going to have real market appeal? You know, whenever I'm coaching speakers, I always suggest you got to work backwards from what people are hungry for and are willing to pay for. And as great as workplace communication is, it's probably not going to stand out. So I think asking questions like that is a really great idea. We've got some other questions. We've got a bunch of people sending in questions. I forgot to mention this. My apologies, but on Instant Teleseminar, of course, a lot of you are online listening in. You're not using your phone, and so you can use the comment box online, and I'm looking at those comments as well as for the folks that are hitting star 2 on their telephone. So in answer to Chuck Rose in Calgary, yeah, Chuck, we're going to get to David's website URL just before the end of this call, so thanks for the reminder on that. Helen, hi Helen in Winnipeg, she's asking for your template for closing a session. David, would you be willing to go into that now?
Yeah, I mean, the close to me, again, it depends on the session. Is it a 1-hour session? Is it a 1-day session, a 3-day session, a 5-day session, a 7-day session? And the close of a session, let's say it's a multi-day program, that close, typically I'll leave a full hour, an hour and a half at the end for the close, right? And it depends. Are we selling something? Have we sold? And I wouldn't wait to the very end to sell. I would sell, again, there's so many questions within the question itself that I'd have to have answered, because it's slightly different each time. But let's just say, you're closing the room. There's a number of things that I love to do. I love to close my events with something. I have a very different close for every single event, and it's something incredibly memorable. So I really like to put a big bow around an event and make sure I have an hour where there's a beautiful connection. You're not working up to the very last second where people are still jamming things in their head, because, again, you lose that ability to really bring out a deeper connection and them wanting to come back and play with you. Remember, your job, there's always a job. The job you want is that they're going to come back. Right? And so hopefully you've already done a sell at some point and you've introduced them to another part of your funnel or introduced them to come and play with you. But again, I wouldn't be doing that at the very, very last second of your event at all. I would be doing something where it's about them. It's some kind of a process. It can be, I just do a beautiful one. The event I just did, for example, I closed the room. And because I'm talking about a lot of the programs about showing up, it's about, really being your authentic self and having really deep relationships with people and connecting. And my contention is that most people, their lights aren't shining brightly. We become the sum of the five people we spend the most time with. So a lot of us are kind of like, our lights aren't shining. So I use a candle. I use candles at the end where everyone, we're in a dark room, everyone's holding a candle, and it's dark. I talk, and I just talk about, you know, about us having the courage to show up authentically and be bright, you know. And I play the poem, you know, from Marianne Williamson, you know. And so there's this wonderful crescendo of connection, and people are hugging people. And again, I could go into it, and I'm trying. I know there's a lot more questions, but yeah. So I would say that last hour comment sheets are really, really important. You know, there's the call to action that has to be in there. So if we want results, they want to know what's my next step as I leave. That has to be built in. You know, there's a sort of a reminder of what they've learned. So, you know, really people can sit down and you say, hey, listen, turn to your partners and talk about the three things that you've got out of today or this last hour that you can absolutely start to use, and then have them get up on the mic and share, because they're still learning, but now they're talking, they're sharing about the big ahas, and one person's aha may not be someone else's. So now other people are hearing it going, oh, I didn't get that. That's awesome. So it's that last chance to drive the learning really, really deep. But there's a lot of complexity to it, but make sure your close is, you know, it's not jammed, it's not tight, it's loose. So don't rush right to the very end.
Nice, very good. Yeah, and I think that's such an important point, because I think for a lot of us, we do we don't premeditate, like we don't think, how am I going to close this? How am I going to leave them wanting more or knowing how to connect with me? And instead, it's sort of a rush at the end. I mean, the worst, of course, is when people are flying through the last 10 slides, looking at the clock frantically. You know, they've really... they may have delivered great content, but they haven't really orchestrated
connected
in such a way that they're going to leave people feeling good, like they've actually had a great experience.
Well, here's the thing, right? Let's pretend you have a 15-minute piece, because everyone gets this thing about time. Give me 15 minutes. Give me 3 minutes. In 3 minutes, I can still have absolute impact. So could you. It doesn't matter. And you've got to say this to yourself. The time doesn't matter. But the challenge is, most of you, if you've got a 15-minute piece, plan a 5-minute piece. Just plan 5 minutes and let the rest of it be connection, listening to them, get them sharing. Because what you can do by turning, let's say you give one point, you have 15 minutes, you give one or two juicy points. Then you say, hey, turn to two or three people and just chat about it. How does this mean for you? What comes up for you? What do you learn from this? And then get them sharing on the microphone so people are talking. You know, they're going to think you're brilliant and you haven't done anything. I always think of myself as a big border collie.
Oops.
I'm there.
Yeah, you're still there. Yeah.
Yeah, I said a big border collie, like chasing sheep. Right. I mean, that's what I do. I corral sheep into experience. It's not about me. Remember that. It's not about me. It's not about me.
That is great. Hey, Dave, we've got a couple more questions, and I wanted to start to help wrap this up here. Francis, you were asking about how to ask a question on the phone. You hit *2 on your telephone. Shirley in Edmonton, you will be getting a replay of this call, and it's going to be available at canadianspeakers.org. You simply log in. At the top of the website where it says members with a big Canadian flag, and you log in, and then you'll see where those recordings are. It's pretty straightforward, or just send me an email. We've got another hand up, and it was Francis. Yeah, so Francis, if you could, I'm going to unmute you, and if you've got a question for David, you can go ahead.
Hi, David. I have two things. The first thing is the comment. I attended an MMI that you led back in November 2005 and never had the opportunity to thank you. It changed my life. Mm-hmm. And my question is, you have had a 12-CD audio set of The Art of Connection. Is that still available, and how do we access it?
Yeah, you know, there's a company called Sound Concepts, and they manage a lot of CDs for me. I do a lot of free content, too. If you want that, you can just go to thekickasslife.com, and I do a lot of free stuff you can have, you know. But if you want to buy the CDs, you can go through Sound Concepts, and they're out of Utah. But if you go, I think it's soundconcepts.com, and they have a lot of my CDs and different things. I've got a series of them, but... You know, but I'd say if you want free stuff, then just go to thekickasslife.com, and I give you lots of free stuff there. So,
great. Thank you so much again.
Thanks for that. Thanks for that, Francis. Yeah. Isn't that nice when someone, David, says, in 2005, you changed my life? That's pretty sweet, eh? Nice work. So, listen, I just want to put a bit of a wrapper on what you just shared with us because I think it's so important. You know, you talked about a template. You talked about opening. You talked about closing. And clearly, in this call, we don't have time to, it's not the right format to go into it in great detail, but I just hope that people get this idea that this is, you know, you've put a lot of thought into it. Like it's very well thought out. You have a system. You've tested it. You've tried. You've watched the masters, and you've come up with a system that's now transferable to different arenas, right? So you can be in front of 10,000 people or 12 people, but you've got a system and a template that you can modify. And I think that that's something that we all need to continue to work on as professionals, is to not treat this like some kind of entertainment that we just sort of, you know, pull out of a hat. It's actually a science, and audiences will respond and, of course, learn more when we get that science and we perfect it. So I really appreciate you sharing just a bit of what you've learned over, you know, through the years, and also by watching the people that have gone before you.
Sure. And if you want me to come back and teach you the training template, we'll do that next time.
Okay. Brilliant. So what's next for you? I know I want people to hear a little bit about Thatch Key Island, Thatch Key Resort in Belize. What's next? What programs can people join you on?
Well, you know, I do my trainer programs are typically at the end of the year, and you can sort of talk to me through the kickasslife.com. You can go on Facebook. It's davidonfacebook.com if you want to ask me questions. I'm happy to connect with you. We did buy a private island off the coast of Belize, which is part of a UNESCO World Heritage Site and a marine sanctuary, and I'm running an event there from the 1st to the 7th, oh, 1st to the 8th of July. And we're doing again, this is a labor of love. You know, when you own an island like that, you just want people to come there. But I'm bringing down a beautiful guy, Dr. Michael Colgan, who's a famous author. This guy's 72, can still do one-arm push-ups. He's unbelievable. Anyway, he's come to train. Jen Newman's coming and myself. And we're going to be doing a mind-body-spirit week. It's going to be the most gorgeous week. It's going to really allow you to sort of to really explore that range I keep talking about. And that's the next thing I've got coming up. You can find out about it. Again, there's a little window. I think if you go to the kickasslife.com/Belize, it'll come up. It tells you all about it. And there's a little window about Belize on my website as well if you want to find out about it. I think there's only about 3 or 4 spots left, so there's not many spots left. But it will be the most gorgeous week of your life. It's not a lot of money. And I do the trainer events. Again, just talk to me. And I this year is pretty booked out, but there may be a chance if we're doing something and you want to come along that you can be a part of it. But if not, just stay in touch through the kick-ass life. And I just think that a trainer's job is really it's about how they show up in their life. You know, and I think as we show up into more of our life, more of our personal range, we're going to be more magnificent in front of a room. And that's why we're challenging. Most of us live between a 4 and a 6 in our personal range, but never go to a 0, never go to a 10. And I think that we have to be really comfortable traveling between a 10 and a 0, you know, that quiet, deep, intimate, spiritual side to that crazy, wacky out there, you know, goofball. And the more we can play that range, this is a great way to think of it, Hugh. You know, if you have someone playing a beautiful violin concerto and they're just playing the one violin, it's gorgeous. But then you listen to an orchestra, you know, and you listen to everything, the oboes, the drums, you know, the cymbals and the Tiffany drums and the clarinets. And we got to be all the instruments. And that's how I like to think of myself, is that I can play all the instruments through me, the vessel, as opposed to one. I think many trainers get stuck in one or two instruments, but they're really afraid of exploring their complete range.
Beautiful. What a great thought to end on. And you know, I think a challenge, because I think going back to what we talked about earlier, so often we're so focused on content that we miss out on the real magic of what we do, the privilege that we're given, where we can really create an experience for people, like the caller earlier. You know, in 2005, you changed. For people that are just sitting there in their spare bedroom listening to this call and thinking, how am I going to get my next booking? I think it's what you should be thinking about more is, how can I be remarkable? Like, how can I, as David said, you know, be interested and, you know, really serve, because there's people out there that want your message, and, you know, it really just takes a little bit of change in the way that we do our business for people to find us, and for when we get those opportunities to excel to the point where people just say, I have got to have that person back. Like, you know, what they did was magical. So, David, listen, thank you for sharing with us today. I know you're super busy, and I really appreciate your time and sharing with CAPS.
Hey, never too busy for you, Hugh. You know that.
I appreciate that. Thank you, my friend.
Yeah.
So,
nice.
Folks, thanks for being on this call. If you go to CanadianSpeakers.org, you know, and log in, it's pretty straightforward. You'll find the archives. I really encourage you to invest in reading, listening to some of the past recordings. We've had Michael Perlmutter. One of my favorite interviews was Michael Perlmutter back October 2011. He is the owner and founder of the largest speaker bureau in Canada, of course, Speaker Spotlight, Rebecca Morgan, Russell Taran from PRPR talking about how to get free publicity, David Meerman Scott, Michael Lozier. My last one was actually before this was Rick Frischman of Morgan James Publishing. He's worked with Mitch Albom, Stephen King, John Grisham. So listen to the interview with Rick Frischman if you're all interested in publishing a book. The next call will be June the 30th. And I can't believe, is that right, June the 30th? It seems like way too far in the future. It must be May. Let me just double check that. My mistake, it's May the 30th at the same time, 12 o'clock Pacific Standard or 3 o'clock Eastern, with Melanie Dordaro. Melanie is a buddy of mine. She is Canada's number one LinkedIn expert. You definitely want to put that on your calendar. So that's May the 30th, and it's at 12 o'clock Pacific Standard, 3 o'clock Eastern, with Melanie Dordaro, and she is going to tell us all about how to create a profile on LinkedIn, how to get known on LinkedIn, how to connect with our clients on LinkedIn, and she's going to share how she has also used LinkedIn to improve her SEO rankings on Google. So listen, thanks to everybody for being on this call. Thanks to Anthony Nijme in our Toronto office for making sure that all the advertisements went out for the call. And listen, take the advice of David and get out there and be remarkable. Thanks, everybody. Take care.